I'm always talking about change that occurs in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. But how do we do it smartly? How do we grow? How do we change things the smart way? So joining me today is Stuart Schwartz, who is the Executive Director of Coalition for Smarter Growth. So thank you for joining me today, Stuart.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. Okay, so growing is one thing, and to do it the smart way, what does that mean?
Well, this movement that started in the 1990s and was led at one point by Governor Glenn Denning of the state of Maryland and many conservation and planning groups around the country is all about revitalizing our cities and our towns and about creating new communities that are more walkable, bike-friendly, where you can walk to the store, coffee shop, and you might have, and hopefully we'll have nearby transit, whether it's bus or something as stellar and once we restore it as our metro rail system.
Mm-hmm. Well, because we know in the metropolitan area, things are ever changing and transportation goes back decades and hundreds of years, if you will. And so when we're talking about walking around in our communities, a livable space, you know, that's really important.
It is. And one of the lessons that's so important here is that land use is really what drives transportation. And where and how we grow determines how much traffic we're going to have and how we get around, how much land we consume, whether we're able to save our forests and farms as we grow. And I'm pleased to note that, you know, there's been such a big shift in the marketplace where people are looking for more walkable urban environments now. They're looking for the city or an older town like Old Town Alexandria. They're reviving places like College Park and Hyattsville. So across the region and across the country, we're seeing this desire to drive a lot less, be able to know your neighbors, be able to, you know, again, walk to the store, have your kids walk to school for a more healthy lifestyle for everyone.
Well, see, I live out in the suburbs, so I'm not in the city, and it's not uncommon for me to see people out in the morning or in the evenings, you know, doing their stroll, getting their steps in and doing their time. In fact, now there are even mommy running groups and, you know, things like that. So that's a suburban picture. So does it look the same in the city? Are we finding out in our more condensed neighborhoods?
Well, each place is different. Let's talk about the suburbs. First of all, you know, we have these established, beautiful single family home suburban neighborhoods. In those cases, we may be just talking about creating bike lanes so it's safer to bike, making sure all the sidewalks are in place and connected, connecting trails to a nearby school or to the store so that for the short trip, you don't have to get in your car for every single one of those trips. And, of course, we're also looking at better bus service. Fairfax, you know, your county has this big transit plan for the future. To provide more express buses for commuters and better local buses for connections. When it comes to the city, one of the things that's interesting is you don't have to wait till you get home at night to go for an exercise walk because you're exercising all day. You will be walking maybe to work. You'll be walking to lunch. You're walking to a meeting, walking to Metro to go to a meeting that's a little farther away, maybe walking over to a playing field to play a pickup game or something like that later in the day. So you're getting your exercise without even thinking about it in those cases.
Well, I didn't even really think about it that way. You're absolutely right. So with your Coalition for Smarter Growth, what is it that you guys look at? How do you come about trying to match what's going on in the community versus the needs? Is that what you guys do? Do you kind of look at the big scope? Do you look at the big picture and see what kinds of changes need to occur?
Everything from the big regional picture down to the local neighborhood level. We'll be there. We only have a small staff of six, but we have amazing partners in conservation groups, local civic activists, affordable housing groups, transit and bike advocates. So it's a team effort. Some of these organizations are small nonprofits that have staff, and otherwise it's a lot of volunteers that work with us and understand these issues. It's big picture, working through the Regional Council of Governments. Their Region Forward Plan from 2010 is a sustainable vision for the future of our region, really ties to what we've talked about for a long time, which is a network of walkable, transit-oriented communities across the region. From Prince George's to Loudoun County.
Okay.
And we work Montgomery, Prince George's, D.C., and then Northern Virginia. We do some state-level policy work, especially with the transportation agencies, because where they allocate their money is important and how they allocate their money is important. But after this regional vision of sustainable growth, a revitalized city, walkable neighborhoods, then we work down in the local county or jurisdictional level with those elected officials and planners and with individual neighborhoods, whether it's a comprehensive plan for a metro station in Prince George's or Seven Corners in Fairfax County. We're there. We invite our members to get involved through action alerts, sometimes with phone calls to have them turn out to hearings.
Oh, okay.
And then we'll review and testify on specific projects because, you know, projects should be well designed. They should include a mix of housing affordability, including, you know, housing for those who make, say, 60% of the area median income. They should provide good community benefits. But the bottom line is we believe development that's located near transit, well-designed, walkable, inclusive, is a really important thing to support in the region.
Okay, so now I'm getting a better picture of what your organization is and the type of service that you provide for community members. So when you were saying that you were going to reach out to your membership, what does your membership consist of? Like, do you have people who call you to volunteer, to help out, to do research? What does your organization look like?
So we don't have a formal membership, but we have nearly 24,000 people on our email list now after 20 years of public involvement. And, you know, a certain percentage of those open the emails and read it and stay informed. Others actually click through, send an alert and an email to their elected official about a certain decision. Or they'll come to our walking tours and forums. We tend to do 10 to 15 of those a year around the region. The walking tours often will be in the spring and the fall when it's a little cooler. And we just see great neighborhoods and evolving neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
We will host happy hours with community members to get them involved. We'll meet with local community groups, make presentations, and we'll sit down with them as they plan the future of their neighborhoods.
So do you go to a lot of board meetings where transportation and growth is considered?
Absolutely. I unfortunately bike a lot less now than I used to and spend a lot more time at planning commission and board meetings in the evenings.
Boo.
Don't see as many movies out either. No, it's, you know, it is an important part of democracy for people to go and be involved. And of course, you know, not everybody can go to evening meetings or even sometimes daytime meetings. So fortunately, many jurisdictions are trying to do a better job of getting the word out through the internet. And have ways for people to provide feedback online without having to go to quite as many meetings.
Mm, yeah, that's nice. You know, it's to be involved, be informed, and to have a voice.
And that's right. And that's the strongest thing we've seen that cuts across all political boundaries and income boundaries is people want to be at the table in planning the future of their communities and to get their ideas on the table. And that's a really important process. Now, no elected official can make everyone happy all the time.
Right.
But I think the more involvement you have, the better decisions you have in the process. But again, at times people will not support a particular project. Sometimes, like, for example, the Purple Line. You
mm-hmm.
know, you've had a very small group of people concerned about the impact of the Purple Line along the Capitol Trail who continue to oppose it, even though it provides a large number of environmental and community benefits.
Now, you know, speaking of the Purple Line, I, throughout the years, have been talking about the Purple Line. Will it happen? Will it not? You know, and how much money have they spent on doing surveys? How much money have they spent on doing research and community outreach? And a lot of money has already been poured into something that does not exist yet. And so, but the process is what's important for people to be involved, to be aware, and to know. And so with that being said, for those, that small group of individuals who are worried about the environmental impact and, you know, changes that will bring with a Purple Line in the area, are we going to be seeing a big environmental impact? I mean, is it minimal? What have we done to ensure that it will be done in the most effective way, I guess?
Well, it has certainly been studied extensively, hundreds of millions of dollars spent, more than that, more than 10 years. I mean, when I started, there were advocates, local advocates in Montgomery County looking for the Georgetown Trolley, the Georgetown mm-hmm. Branch Trolley between Silver Spring and Bethesda. It then expanded to include the full Purple Line all the way over to New Carrollton. And it's been many points of community involvement. There's been a full environmental impact study, and that's what the lawsuits are over today. There was a final record of decision issued by the federal government. And, you know, there are localized impacts. I love trees. My wife loves trees. We will lose some great old trees as they try to combine the trail, the existing bike trail, and a light rail line, the tracks of the light rail line. They will, of course, replant lots of different trees in the right of way. You'll have a combined light rail and bike trail. The bike trail will be much enhanced because it will include overpasses over very busy roads like Connecticut Avenue.
Okay.
So it will make biking along the trail much safer. It will complete parts of the trail that are missing, significant parts of it.
See, now that's the part I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so there are many bike groups that are supportive of it because of the trail advantages it's going to provide, including some connections in downtown Bethesda. It's critical for revitalizing inside the Beltway communities in both eastern Montgomery and in Prince George's County. It'll improve access to jobs. There's a jobs housing imbalance in the region, an east-west jobs divide. But this will, at least in the near term, connect people on the east side of the region to jobs in Silver Spring and Bethesda. And then with the Red Line, you can continue then up to Shady Grove, you know, White Flint, Shady Grove, those areas. And in turn, though, the presence of transit can be a good catalyst for bringing new investment into a community.
Okay.
We'll just have to make sure that when they do that, we also have the right affordable housing preservation strategies in place as well.
Yeah, the affordable housing strategy, you know, that's major and that's key because a lot of people, I don't know the exact number, are going to be losing their homes as a result of the Purple Line coming through. Is there going to be a lot? Is there going to be a small impact?
The direct impact on homes is very small,
okay.
if minimal. The issue can be that the presence of rail transit can spark increases in property values. It can cause an owner of a garden apartment complex decide to upgrade it and put in granite countertops and rename it, as one elected official said, the Infinity, and raise the rents. And that's a concern.
That's
or they could sell to a larger developer and tear it down and build mixed use. So that's why there has been a number of groups that have worked for a long time with local officials on preservation strategies. How do you preserve the garden apartments? How do you, you know, say, give tax abatements to the current landlords so that they will keep it affordable for a longer period of time? Invest housing trust funds into buying some of these places and keeping them affordable. I don't think the pressures will be nearly as great as they were, you know, with the Metro Rail system and the value that the Metro Rail system creates for land value, like right here where we're sitting in Navy Yard, for example.
Right.
It's something we have to pay attention to. There's also it would be helpful to provide loans and grants to small businesses, small local businesses, to allow them to either relocate or upgrade and, you know, get ready for a new market or maybe a more diverse market income-wise for their products in the community. But overall, you know, the reinvestment is important. It can bring jobs to the east side of the region and inside the Beltway. And there's also something else to think about when you think about affordability that we always talk about. And this is for people of all income levels. You have to look at affordability from a transportation and housing perspective. Very often people will move far away from the core of the region to buy a more affordable home.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't count on what their transportation costs are each day.
Mm-hmm.
And transportation costs can eat up 30% of your income pretty quickly. So we're looking for, and there's even a tool you can use. It's available on the website called the Housing Plus Transportation Cost Calculator. And you can put in your location of the home you want to buy and look what your combined housing plus transportation costs might be.
Get out. Really?
And that's it's a good tool because many, there have been a couple studies that said the real estate collapse in 2007 was prompted in part by people buying far away and not counting in their budgets what their transportation costs would be, especially when gas prices jumped from $1.10 to $4 during about a 5-year period.
Wow. Yeah. I guess it all kind of makes sense, you know?
Well, it's all connected.
Yeah, I guess so. Absolutely. I'm speaking today with Stuart Schwartz, and he is the executive director of Coalition for Smarter Growth. And one of the descriptions of housing that you mentioned when we were talking, because this was in my head, was mixed use.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're seeing that come up all over the country because people want to shop where they live and work where they live kind of vision. I guess that's what people are trying to, you know, put. But if you really look at mixed use, as I've seen them, I see more shopping and restaurants and apartments. And I don't know that everybody is actually working there. Where they
well,
live.
It depends. It depends on the neighborhood. But ideally, we would combined in the region as a whole can bring most of our new housing and jobs closer to metro rail stations overall. That's what the regional vision is.
Okay.
To put a larger and larger percentage of future growth closer to metro. That can mean that downsizing empty nesters can sell their single family home in the suburbs. They could sell to a new young family. And they'll downsize to a condo or an apartment in a more walkable place. And it doesn't have to be in the city. It could be in Falls Church, where they're building some medium height buildings, mid-rise buildings in Falls Church. And so if you want to stay in the city of Falls Church with its nice leafy neighborhoods, you're there. You're just moving over to Broad Street.
Mm-hmm.
And you now live in you've downsized. If you have access to Metro and then your job is at another Metro station, that's fine. You now have tied in to a mode of transportation that pollutes less, and you're helping everybody else who may still have to drive on the roadways while doing that. So the other thing that's happening is, and it's affecting all retail, is that we're buying online a lot more.
Yes.
That's actually maybe good for transportation. We'll see. I mean, there's still a lot more delivery trucks, but maybe a lot more people making frustrating trips to multiple places to try to find just that right thing at the store.
That means
the sorts of things we have in retail is a lot more food, restaurants, bars, coffee shops, and a lot more experiential things, gathering places like coffee shops, but also for your kids as well. There would be activity type oriented spaces, and then there's still some basic services you can probably use like dry cleaning and other convenience stores things like that. Maybe small hardware stores nearby, but. It's a rapidly evolving place, retail, with Amazon and others playing such a big role. And so we're not sure what it's going to mean for our communities.
Mm-hmm.
We're also looking ahead. I was just in a discussion yesterday at the University of Maryland about autonomous vehicles. What will that do to where and how we grow as a country?
Mm.
And it could mean that we spread out even more. And because you can sit and read the paper...
and read a paper?
Yeah, no. Well, on your phone, of course, or on your heads-up display in your autonomous vehicle, and it's taking you in 50 miles from a mountaintop into the city, and maybe you're only going a couple times a week. If that spreads us out a lot more, there's great convenience and amazement about an autonomous vehicle. On the other hand, who's going to provide the fire service to your home?
Yeah.
All this other infrastructure has to chase us as we move farther and farther out. And that's a real problem. I just read a thing that was posted about Cleveland today. The Cleveland and that part of Ohio have lost population over the last 50 years, but spread out like five times the size of where they had been before.
Oh, my goodness.
So they're losing population and spreading out, and there's simply no way for the country or that region to pay for fixing what's left behind.
Oh, yeah.
And providing services and building all the new services.
Huh.
And that's why what we talk about is not only, in our view, great for the environment, better for, social integration and family life, but also more fiscally affordable for us.
Okay. And so, but then there's, the side of people that just want their space. They don't want to be stacked on top of someone.
Right.
Well,
there's something for that, too. I mean, it's still more compact, but it's not multifamily housing. There's a great architecture movement called the Congress for the New Urbanism and Traditional Neighborhood Development.
Okay.
These are neighborhoods where the houses are still closer together than old suburbia, but they all seem to be built closer together nowadays than they used to.
Yeah.
Because, honestly, there are plenty of people who do not want to mow the yard or they want it to take 10 minutes and not all day. And, of course, their kids won't mow it anymore because they're looking at their phones or something. But and those neighborhoods are much more like our historic towns where you have a main street you can walk to. You have a different mix of housing types, not all the same size,
right,
where they all look identical.
Mm.
So there's a mix. So there's a mix of ages and incomes and so forth and more walkability without necessarily being, you know, 6 to 10 story buildings.
Right. So now, okay, so, you know, we've been talking about walking a lot and getting to where we want to go. We have a lot of vehicles in our region, and one of the biggest problems is parking. Even on game day, I almost have to get here like hours early just so I can ensure that I will have a place to park for something that's not going to occur for 4 or 5 more hours. Well, so, you know.
Well, first of all, the walkable transit-oriented neighborhoods that we're talking about are there to handle the next 1 million people coming to this region. So imagine when, if they were all driving. So the goal is to give people as many options not to drive as we can, with better transit, walkable neighborhoods, mix of uses, and you know, that way those who have to drive, say a contractor or people who have odd schedules that don't work with Metro, if you have to be here for a 6 a.m. radio show from a long distance, that those roads are available to you, that those facilities are.
I never have a problem parking at 6 in the morning, sorry.
There you go. Well, thank you for introducing supply and demand.
Okay,
as
so
a
there
topic.
You go.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things, and you see it with the meters out here in the street here in the Navy Yard area, is you have electronic parking techniques and you're able to vary the price. So part of the problem is if you had all free parking, people would just sit in those spaces all day.
Correct.
So what you're trying to do is look for what we call performance parking, where you price the parking on the streets for more turnover and encourage people to park in garages, you know, to not occupy the street space.
Mm-hmm.
And you price it all so that people understand what the cost of driving really is and what that cost of that parking space really is.
Mm.
And underground parking space is about $50,000 per space to build.
Mm.
You know, above ground structure could be $30,000, $35,000, and the surface $12,000. So this isn't free, and there's even a book, The High Cost of Free Parking. So D.C. is exploring different ways to address parking. And, you know, once you know the real cost of parking, you can then make this trade-off and decide, well, I think in that case, transit or bike share is a better way for me to go in this community.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an important piece of it. You know, thankfully, they located this great baseball stadium near Metro, so that not everybody has to drive, and a very large percentage take transit. And an even larger percentage probably take transit to the Verizon Center. Then you have the situation of the Redskins Stadium, and you know, where it's at least a mile from the closest Metro station.
It's a country mile.
and brave souls will walk that.
Yes.
On those horrible, super wide, hot suburban arterial roads, which we should no longer be building, but unfortunately we do. And so transit's kind of a painful experience to get there, but maybe still not as painful as the traffic on game days at the stadium. So football stadiums are a little different. We got to leave room for the tailgates, right? So
yeah.
Some people are all, you know, going to drive and they can host the tailgates. But even a football stadium like the old RFK site with a Metro station closer can do better for everybody and for transportation if we have some better transit access to it.
So what are we looking at as far as our future is concerned in our in the metropolitan area? What is it that the Coalition for Smarter Growth would like to see happen, or the process in which we want to see these changes made?
Well, first of all, we think what we're doing is imperative. It's imperative for our economic competitiveness. This is where companies want to be. They want to be in cities near metro stations like Marriott moving to Bethesda, or Nestle moving from California to Roslyn, Virginia at the metro station. That's where young people want to be.
Mm-hmm.
Many more downsizing empty nesters are coming back to these places. And if we want to avoid choking on our own traffic, then we have to create more of these types of communities we've been talking about here. So people have the option to live in a place where they can drive less, if at all. And that will make the whole system function better for everyone. It will also reduce air pollution, and it will reduce greenhouse gas emissions that cause climate change. Given that we're the nation's capital and international capital, I think we should be a model in fighting climate change. Our own monumental core is under threat from rising sea level and flooding. There will be increasing rain events and heavy-duty floods like the one we had this past weekend. Those will be more common. There might even be periods of drought where we have drinking water problems. So the more we can do to have a more sustainable way to grow, like we've talked about, the more we can reduce our greenhouse gas emissions, preserve forests and farms for the future, protect our drinking water supplies, then we can survive and be competitive in the future. But if we were to return to business as usual, just spreading out, making everything 100% auto-dependent, then I'm concerned about the future of the region and the country.
Wow. Pretty well said there. Gives a lot of food for thought. You know what I mean? So how does your organization fund itself? I mean, you, what do you guys do? Do you have events? How does it work for Coalition for Smarter Growth?
Well, we're a 501c3 nonprofit organization.
Okay.
There are a couple of local foundations who have been really strong supporters of us from the beginning. They now comprise about 47% of our funding as we've diversified. The other remaining part is half individual donors, very generous individual donors, everybody from $10 to a couple thousand dollars. And in addition, we've started in the last couple of years to solicit corporate funding. This is funding from architecture firms, planning firms, and developers doing smart growth development. We've had to do that because the foundations have a lot of demands on them, including for direct social services that are important. So we can't tap them too much for these policy reforms and planning reforms that we're working on. In the case of the corporate supporters, we still review their projects with a tough eye, and we make comments to them about how their projects could be improved. And but we will, you know, both for those who donate to us and those who don't, we'll support well-designed projects. An important reason to do this is we don't have enough housing close to jobs and in the core of the region. You know, everywhere we turn, there can be an opposition, outright opposition to any project.
Right.
And in the process, we're losing, you know, hundreds if not thousands of housing units that we could provide. And in all cases, we're getting a share of that housing to be affordable because our organization helped pass laws in D.C. and other jurisdictions called inclusionary zoning, where there's a certain percentage of units have to be set aside to be affordable. And so the private sector is contributing to that, to the overall housing stock plus the affordable housing stock.
I think people need to check you out. They need to go to smartergrowth.net and see what you're about, how you work within the community and the community's interest. I don't want people to be mistaken to think that you work for, you know, any transportation agency or any particular land use agency or anything like that. You know, you're an independent nonprofit that really has an eagle eye, if you will, over the region to point out some, you know, important things.
And we, you know, we've been independent the whole time, now 20 years. We hope to be around 20 more years. We just celebrated our anniversary, and it has been a team effort. And so it's a diverse group of people that are involved with us, everyone from a big developer to someone concerned about rural preservation to someone concerned about affordable housing and revitalization of older neighborhoods in the city and access to jobs. Because where we grow and how we grow is connected to all of these issues.
Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners before we wrap up today?
No, this has been a great interview. I really appreciate it. Certainly go to smartergrowth.net and sign up for our action alerts, donate, come on our walking tours and forums, and please you know, get involved in your local community in supporting the sort of walkable, well-designed, inclusive neighborhoods.
I like the walkable part. I'm trying to get on that train. Ah, double pun there. Transportation is what it is. As I always say to our listeners before I wrap up, staying in touch to keep you in touch here on CBS Radio DC.